So welcome to everybody. This event is part of the Korean Pavilion's contribution to the International Zone. We're here at Unity Pavilion, but soon we will have a Korean Pavilion somewhere out there in the zone. So you probably have read the poster, and so you have some idea, but we're doing three things today. This is the first event, and this will be last about a half an hour. And then we will have some refreshments over there, some Korean delicacies. And then we will go into the lecture hall for the talk about the garden. And that will last about an hour. So it's about a 2-hour program. The other thing to remember that in the context of Oroville, this is not just, it is partly, entertainment, it's education, but more deeply, this is human unity. So the international zone of Oroville is set up so that we can experience directly in our being what human unity means, because we have the people from all over the planet, and we can experience the cultures and the dance and all of it. So just to keep that in mind, because it's not that someday Oroville is going to be ready. Oroville is ready now. Yes. And it is happening. Yes. And it is happening here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, welcome. This performance we called it None Is It. By that we mean when you are looking at a picture, what you're actually seeing is what comes in your mind. So two people looking at the same picture, as long as it is not even if it is a photo, they will see different things, and the same person may see different things on a different day. So what is really the end product of art? It's something that's happening in your mind, right? And let's put it that way. Very quickly. Okay, never mind. Now, what do you see?
Tree and rock.
Pardon?
Trees and rock.
Okay.
Zebra. A lotus bud.
What else?
Zebra.
What is it?
Mountain.
Mountain, okay. An animal, wonderful.
Yeah, a robot.
Anything else? No, I was. Oh, what?
Hudson River Mountain.
Wonderful. Now, all this is correct, of course, but what you have seen is a white paper with a little ink on it. The rest was all in your mind. And that's what all the performance is about. And there is another thing. There are people who paint as if they are a photo apparatus. What do they call it? A camera. There are others who leave way for chance, for it happening. And the painting process itself becomes sort of a meditation. And with those people, what happens is they start painting and they have a certain image in their mind. And then they have this stroke and see what happened on the white paper, and this image they had before disappears. And they start working on what is happening on the paper. It's no longer them who are forcefully doing something when it is good enough. It happens in a sort of dialogue between the painter, the painting, the ink. So you could say somebody obviously is making a picture, but really it is it making it. So it is not only what happens in your mind, it is also part of the process of how art can be done. And this is what all our performance is going to be about.
Can I ask you something? The word art in Korean, what does it mean?
Art in Korea, there is a word art which comprises all arts and technique put together. So the technical aspect is very important, actually.
Different cultures also.
And also painting, there also is the technical aspect in there. So it's the same word in China and Japanese.
Wenhua?
No, Wenhua is culture.
Culture.
That's culture.
Thank you.
In Korean it's Yisul. I don't know. It should be something like Sutsu. My Japanese is 45 years ago.
Culture is Bunka.
Bunka is Munhua, is culture.
Yeah.
And the difference between culture and Munhua is Bun or Mun or Wen in Chinese means writing.
Writing.
Something, and Hua is to change into something. So their concept of culture is high culture, something that turns into script. Whereas our culture, you know what it comes from? Kultura means to till the soil.
Kultura, yeah.
Right? That's a different concept. Okay.
Okay, for the rain.
Now, I want to ask you to close your eyes. Just look at it as concentrated as you can. Try to see it when your eyes are closed. I will tell you when to open the eyes again. Close your eyes. Okay, now open them again and see what you see. Okay, that was part one, and it had to do with your eyes. Now we're going to do something which has to do with the ears. Because all the senses work the same way. What you see is what you know. And so we will now ask you to come over and take two of these stones. What I suppose we do is, after a moment of silence, we all start clapping. listen to that sound, imagine what that sound is, and then I will say one, two, three, stop, and immediately we all stop clapping and listen to the silence. Okay? Mm-hmm. First the silence. Now let us start clicking.
You can leave here or you can take as you wish.
We would like to start the last part of the program. Please come in. We'd like to thank the kitchen crew for this wonderful. Also, you may have noticed the special costumes that Werner and Sinchao were wearing. These were designed by Oak, our famous background. So many of you, I think, know Werner is a great Korean scholar who set up a Korean cultural center at the university in Germany, and also taught both in Germany and in Korea. And so he has put together this slideshow. It's a slideshow about a special garden that will give a certain essence of the Korean culture that has been somehow embodied in the landscape of this garden. So I'll let Werner tell you about all of that. And thank you for coming, and I hope you enjoy this program.
Okay, a scholar's retreat garden in Damyang-gun. Damyang-gun is in the southwest of the Korean peninsula, way away from the capital. And when I said that it is representative for certain aspects of Korean culture, probably somebody would have thought, well, wait a moment, a scholar, that's high class. What about the people? And then I want to tell you that the people actually were also very educated in Korea. I mean, it all starts when you have the Western culture and compare the Eastern cultures. What we do when we greet each other, we establish a fake power hierarchy. Sir, madam, Herr, Frau are all titles in the nobility, right? Whereas the Eastern cultures, China and Japan, the same, they establish a fake education hierarchy. The attitude is, I can learn something through the other person. And I think that is a very important aspect, which already shows a big difference. And another nice thing is, originally there were different names for men and women, and in
at least in South Korea these days, the teacher, independent of gender, became the word for any other person. So we have a development there which is nice to mention. Good. Korean is a literary culture. The last dynasty, which is actually one of the longest dynasties in the world, established right at the beginning a school in every county. The idea was to follow Confucius, who had said teaching and leading the people should be done by the educated, not by gentry, which is hereditary. You know, Confucius in general conception these days, especially in the West, he's a reactionary. Forget it. Confucius was a revolutionary. He tried to abolish the classes, and one of the things he advocated was education. And the new dynasty in Korea, which started at the beginning of the 15th century, first thing they established in the country was a land reform and schools. And also there were private schools in the course of time, because of course to pass the state examination to become a civil servant was not all that simple. You had to learn a lot, and not everybody was able to really learn towards the end. But he had learned to read and to write, and he had to learn a certain amount of the classics. So people said, okay, we don't care about the state examination. You can read, you can write, teach our children. Mm-hmm. And so they had village schools. And another important aspect, of course, is the grandparents. Children were mainly educated by the grandparents. There's something to learn for education in our societies as well in this sentence. Okay. I like that one. I call it this book, King Sejong's Taj Mahal. You know, the Taj Mahal, everybody knows that. Taj Mahal was built by a king who was sorry that his wife had died. Now King Sejong was sorry that his wife died. So what he did is, he ordered his son to compile the Buddha's life. And then, out of this, which was of course in Chinese, he made himself a Korean language poem, 580 double lines, about the life of Buddha for his wife. And that is, for me, a nice picture. Not the big building, a book. Now, we have to go down to real politics. Of course, there was a power struggle in Korea, and in the 16th century, it was especially bad between the old aristocracy, that is the aristocracy from the dynasty before. They had sworn allegiance to the former dynasty, and many of them, when the new dynasty came, said, look, no, we are not going to change. We have said we would be true to our last dynasty. Now, this dynasty is gone. Sorry, we cannot now start for the new dynasty. That would be dishonest. So, what the new dynasties did is, they couldn't do much against this old aristocracy, but they established a new one. Those people who had held the new dynasty were also given hereditary titles, and that was 25 times during the last dynasty, and it was connected with a lot of influence at court. And of course the old aristocracy was against them. Now you must envision a capital where the new nouveau riche, the new gentry, where they had the power. And the old landed gentry was mainly the countryside, but of course also a lot of them had houses in the capital. Now, there were times when those Sarim called, the old aristocracy, when they got into power, what they did is abolish the privileges of the Hungu, of the other times. When they got into power, the whole story reversed again. And so we had purges. In those days, it was not very good to be in the opposition party. These days, very often, you know, in some countries at least, in the opposition, where you end up is either in confinement or in exile, which after all is better than being killed, and that's what happened to a lot of opposition people in Korea. Now, the Sarim, as I said, were loyalists of the last dynasty, and they were very puritanical. Okay, now, important is that these bloody purges affected Yang Sanbo, one of these people who were, they got into power from the, they were from the old aristocracy, and he, this man, was a bit stupid in a way. He was very good, very efficient in a lot of new developments in the society. But, of course, he was not careful enough to watch his enemies. So when the other party came into power again, they convinced the king that he had to give the order to kill this man, which he unfortunately did. Now, the man who started the garden, Yang Sanbo, he was one of the students of this man. And, of course, these schools were connected with power, and they were in themselves coherent. That is, I could never follow any other person than my teacher. Which of course means when my teacher gets beheaded, who's in danger? Me. So what do these people do? They go back to the countryside. They can afford to go on living because they have money. They have money and land and slaves. So what they started was what I call a bohemian life. On one side, they were very good in writing books about all sorts of subjects, including philosophy, including practical stuff, like agriculture, but they also indulged in poetry, in singing, and drinking. Important part of the culture. I'm not talking about tea. Now, the founder of this garden called himself the old man Sose, although he was a young man. He had been only 1 year and a half under this man who got killed and then returned to the countryside, but he called himself Old Man Sosue. And the reason is, So is the sound of beating rain and wind. It means light and ethereal. It's the name, both are names of the river. But together, Sosue means light-hearted, lifted above the sordid bustle of this world. And unconventional. So he made this a motto for his life. I told you that. Now, the nice thing about the garden is he started it. He made a plan. He talked with his children about it. He wrote about it. But it was finished only after 5 generations. Why? Because when he died, he said, okay, never sell this garden to anyone outside the family. Never give it to a descendant who is stupid. And never make it the possession of one single person. This is our family thing. And actually, it is today. The man who is supervising the garden is a descendant of this man. And it's actually a big problem because the state cannot help the family because it's private. But they cannot give this garden to the state to take care of because of this will. So there is a dilemma there. Anyway, you see that there is the construction really was finished after six generations. Unfortunately, in between, some of the buildings were burnt down when the Japanese invaded Korea for some time. And there are many records about it, and that's why we know what the meaning of this garden is. The other gardens are similar, but we don't know exactly the meaning. But here we have, and that is the important one, the map of Sosewan. We have poetry, we have prose, but we have a map. And in this map, there is written down what it means. I will show you later. First, I want to say the basic principles of Korean beauty and culture is non-artificiality and naturalness, and outward simplicity combined with hidden and, you know, very hidden philosophical and literary meaning. And I've added two pictures which are not Korean to sort of point to this difference. We all know the Japanese gardens, who are very artificial, that's the point there. And we know the Chinese gardens, which are very rectangular, right? Most of them anyway. Whereas the Korean garden, actually there's one wall near the near brook that I discovered only after 1 year that's what is artificial. It was so well done as if it was natural, that I, you know, only after a year could realize that. Okay. This is the map. And you see here people, you know, maps are centered. You know, this is upside and this is the other way around, right? You see the people here are on top. But the important part is what you cannot read here, and it doesn't matter that it is so badly written, because it's all in Chinese, you wouldn't understand it anyway. So, but my point is, we can follow what is written down and then understand the garden. And the beauty of the garden really is the natural beauty, flowers, rocks, and the hidden philosophical or literary meaning on top. And when you understand both structures, then you have the beauty of the garden. Not when you go there, like the modern Koreans, of course, to go there, don't understand, photograph, and go home. That is not quite what you should do. Okay. In order to understand what I mean by hidden meaning, the names on the map give clues for understanding the literary structure. And we have two pavilions in there, we have more, but two of them are called Light Breeze in the Sun After the Rain Has Stopped, and the other one, Invigorating Moon After the Rain Has Stopped. And when you look in the dictionary, it says Light Breeze and Clear Moon, which is a symbol of man's clear virtue, pure and high personality. But the origin is from the biography of Zhou Dong-yi, who is one of the forefathers of the Neo-Confucian, the modern Confucian philosophy. And in his biography, his character is said to be like a light breeze and a clear moon. So what we have here is two pavilions are actually given the name, which is the characterization of one of the important people of Confucianism. So when the men and women who went into the garden and saw this, they were immediately reminded of Zhou Dong-yi. But you know, if you don't know the biography of this philosopher, this is just nice names, right? And of course the moon, and of course the sun, and what else? But the meaning is deep. Okay. Now the way into the garden is a bamboo wood. And the bamboo already is a symbol. It's evergreen in snow, symbol of longevity and fidelity. It's upright, but flexible, very important. Flexible in strong wind, like an educated gentleman. Now that is a different kind of concept than what we normally are taught in school. Huh? We are always taught, be honest, even if it hurts the other person. Not so the gentleman. The gentleman is a little more flexible then. And the important thing, he always comes back to the upright position. And the other one is, it's empty inside. And the emptiness is a sign, if the heart is empty, you are modest, right? So the bamboo is a symbol. The front yard, you come to a lotus pond, and that's interesting. Lotus ponds are all over the gardens in East Asia, not only the Buddhist ones. And it's called lotus pond. But on this map, it says water shield plants. Water shield is one kind of lotus. Water shield plants scattered in the pond. So when you enter the garden, first thing is you are confronted with a water shield garden in the pond. This is another view of this garden, this pond. And there's one nice thing I like. I call it a soundscape. Can you see here? This bamboo, it's half a bamboo, has holes in it. Holes. So the water flowing up there, it's tickling. Can you imagine the sound when it is absolutely quiet in a secluded valley and you have this tickling sound? Beautiful. Anyway, the water shield plant has another meaning. This is the water shield plant. This is how it looks. This is a small kind of lotus. Zhang Han was a man who had to go to a different country in order to become a civil servant there. And one day, when the wind blew, the autumn wind blew, he brought the smell of a special soup of water shield plants in the soup. And he suddenly realized how stupid it is to go to a foreign country and become a good administrator. It would be much better to return home, live in a solitude or a quiet scholar's life at home. You have the story of Yang Sanbo? Right? So he says, just as Zhang Han has made this decision, I have made that decision, which is a sort of whistling in the wood, because actually probably he went to Seoul first to become a civil servant, and only when his teacher was murdered he discovered that the country life was much better. Now when you enter the garden, you see how beautiful it is, lying in, surrounded by mountains. And you walk along this wall and you see this pavilion there. And there were poems on the wall, which is one of the reasons why we know exactly what is on the map. And I will, I made a translation of one of the poems that were on the wall. It says, the title is Walking in Gentle Manner on Polished Steps. Calm and serene, leaving worldly thoughts behind, sauntering at ease on polished steps. Humming, I calmed whatever desire, and then all sentiments were sharp and clear. What we have here again is a wonderful East Asian poem, sauntering at ease on polished steps, and then all sentiments were sharp and clear, which of course is true. But the important thing are two words. Sauntering at Ease is the title of the first book in the collected works of Chuangzi. So what we have here is a Confucian scholar who says, in the beginning of my garden, you should remember Chuangzi. Chuangzi is Taoist, right? So we have here a combination which is very common in Korean educated Confucian scholars. They also are Buddhists, they also are Taoists. So that is the significance of the poems there. Then there's a small pool in front of the pavilion, and this pavilion was the, we will see it in a second, was where the owner would greet his guests. And before you come there, it was a small pond, and there were fish in there. And that is a double significance. Again, we have a high meaning and a practical one. The high meaning is, just like a fish, when he goes on land, will die. A scholar who deviates from the correct way will die. That is the higher meaning. The other one, you can keep fish in there, which when you fillet them is a very good, when you drink the first drink with your guests, you have something to nibble. So they would actually have angled them and had some made, fillet them and eat them as anju, right? Okay, this is the waiting for the Phoenix Terrace. And the other pavilions are all tile-roofed and very gentleman-like. This one is, as you see, straw-roofed to show the humbleness of the owner of the garden greeting the guest. Just like in modern Korean, when you're invited at home, they would have a plush table with, I don't know, 25 different kinds of dishes, and then say, I'm sorry, there's nothing much on the table but eat a lot. And that is the same attitude. Now, it says, the phoenix, waiting for the phoenix. The phoenix has many meanings. And one meaning is, it is the distinguished guest. Now, that is why this pavilion is called Waiting for My Distinguished Guests, in the form of the phoenix. Now the phoenix has, in literature, oops, yeah, the phoenix loves the paulownia tree, Odongnamu. That's why next to this pavilion there is a paulownia tree, an Odongnamu. And the phoenix also loves bamboo. He actually eats of bamboo. So there is a bamboo hedge near. And this is what I mean. Of course, paulownia trees are beautiful, and you can actually plant them anywhere if you want to, and they're nice. But to have them next to the place where you wait for the phoenix makes a lot of sense, right? So we have here, again, the garden is structured according to literature. Then there's a loving the sun. These characters means loving the sun, terrace. And it's in the northeast corner. And in the north, you have a mountain which keeps the strong cold wind away. And then you have the sun from the south. So this corner is actually pretty warm. And it is said that he built it for Hyo, for filial piety. And the normal interpretation that you hear is filial piety is you are, you know, pious to your father. Mm. Now, there is a trick. You see this tree there? The tree in this corner loving the sun is a camellia tree. And the camellia has a fruit which is oily. And this oil was used by the women for their hair. So let's think again of Hyo, filial piety, directed towards whom? I don't have to interpret that one, right? Good. Then there's a pine tree lying down. Actually, it's falling off all the time. That was a mistake in the original construction. It doesn't work. But the idea was to have a pine tree greeting the guests. Then there's a small plank over a brook, and it's about this deep, and the plank is only this small. So when you enter the garden after the phoenix terrace, what you have to do is go very, very carefully, slowly, slowly. Like you are entering in the right manner. There is no other way. It's too dangerous. Right? Okay. This door where the... Maybe it's clearer here. Can you see in the back here? The brook comes... This is the wall, but this is empty, right? So the water comes through here, and the water then has five bends on the rock. It bends five times, five curves. And that is why it is called O Gong Mun, five bends here. Five bends. Now this is this O Gong, again has several meanings. And of course it refers to the five curves of the water down there. The last one actually been man-made, even if you don't see it at first sight. But Ogok also is a very important basic rule, system of rules, for the five relationships in a proper society. Ogok is the same as Oryun. Father and son, when it is okay, are in intimacy and affection. Sovereign and subject, justice and loyalty. Not top down, vice versa, both directions. Then husband and wife are different. You also can come bien. Here is not 5 meters behind. It means different, complementary. And then you have elder brother, younger brother, and among friends you have trust. What I like about this is, or what is typical, it starts with father, son, not with the king. Okay. This is the Ogongmun again. Now there is an edge, the water. This pond here has been made a little artificial. You see that it is not the natural water flow, but it looks almost natural. And it is called on the map, supporting the Komungo, which is a musical instrument which has very deep sound, just like the speech of a gentleman should be serene, right? So it is called Okchuhengum, the supporting the Komungo at the clear water edge, and that is a line from Chinese poetry about a gentleman. And you know, the thing itself is not very significant. But it's very small, and you know, of course, you can. The one person can sit there and play Komungo, of course, right? But the beauty of this garden is not the outward beauty. It's made as if it's natural, and somebody can sit down and play a musical instrument there. Then there was an artificial mountain which is gone. The villagers used the slabs for their houses. But what they did is they would write on these rocks poems. And that is a nice thing. We just had it a little. These poems would be washed away by the next rain. It was meant for the process of writing the poetry, not to keep it. The next rain would just wash it away. Okay? Then there's a flat rock. What you can do there is lie down in the shade. The table rock is just big enough to play games there, talk with your friend. And then there's a waterfall. And this waterfall is, as you see, artificial. But it's almost like a natural waterfall, isn't it? And then you have the pavilions, and the interesting thing here is, I couldn't make a ground plan. These pavilions are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 equal-sized squares. And the one in the middle and the back here, which is open now except for one wall, has doors here hanging. These doors can be put down, and there is a chimney in the back. You can heat this the floor of this room. So in summer, he would have opened the whole thing up, and in winter he would close this one this one room, and could sit there even with his friends even in winter. This is another view of the pavilion. It's nice, the gate between the inner yard and the brook yard. Even these young girls have to bow when you go into the inner yard, because the inner yard is where the master would read and make philosophy. So everybody who goes there naturally has to bow. What he wrote there is the cottage of the retired gentleman, Sir Sose. And remember, he was 20 when he was retiring. Right? The other pavilion is in the back of the yard, and it looks like this. And here you see, wait a moment. Here under is the fireplace. And it is three kan. You have here the room that you can close in winter and open these doors. He didn't fold them up when this photo was done, but he could actually fold them up under the roof. And then you have two further ones, which you can close or open the back, because when the north wind comes, in summer you want it, in spring, in autumn you really don't want it, so you can close it and still have an open room. And there's another fine here. You see this chimney? Now the chimney is not very high, and that is very interesting, because you know, the higher a chimney is, the better, the less smoke you have, right? Okay. But what happens here is, there is a yard in the front. You see the part here, there's a wall and it goes around. And in the back of the house you have this chimney which is producing smoke, which will then stand in the yard, and you are in the pavilion above of it. Mm-hmm. Just like in paradise, away from the hustle and bustle of this mundane world. And that is why this chimney is so slow. This is the bridge going out of the garden into the bamboo forest. And this is the house next to it, where the owner today is living, and this is where I say thank you very much.